Since it is about 10:45, we do have a panel that we're going to do, and it's also going to be a panel in an open forum, so we can actually actively engage with women who have, you know, we're going to discuss experience that have happened. You know, they can tell some critical story from their life with their faith and their science, and then I do definitely want to engage conversation with an open forum. So I would like to welcome the panel members up. That would be lovely if you could all come up, please. Oh, and there is also blank paper up here if you guys just want to like write notes and stuff like that too, or encouragement and everything. Amazing. Look at all these lovely ladies.
Lovely ladies.
Thank you guys so much for being here. Okay, so I'm going to introduce our panel. We obviously have the lovely Lindberg. Just absolutely love her. They are going to do their own brief introduction, so I'm not going to go overly too much into what they specialize in and everything, because I'll let them do that. Then we have the lovely Leslie Wickman, our esteemed executive.
Nobody knows me.
And then Hannah Eagleson as well, InterVarsity and ESN. Absolutely just love her. She has been so encouraging through this process as well. And then, I always misenunciate your last name.
It's Ermer.
Okay, thank you. For some reason, I always add an L. I don't know why. But Gail Ermer, and we actually heard her this morning with the devotional, which was absolutely wonderful and fantastic, and thank you so much for that. All right, so I'm going to let them kind of take that off in whatever order you ladies feel. The other end. All right, Gail, so kick it off.
Okay. I just thought I would share my story so I can orient you to where I've come from. I grew up in a Christian family in West Michigan, relatively conservative family, but I think my dad certainly very open to the idea of me being academically successful and that being sort of a vocational call, and very supportive of that. Good at math and science in high school, so had a career day one day where they had a chemical engineer talk in class, and I thought, oh, engineering, that seems like it might be a good fit. That was following the idea of maybe meteorology, because I was really into theater when I was in high school too, and I thought, oh, science. But then the job prospects for that at the time, that's a long time ago, no, they didn't have stations with meteorologists, three to a station. There were like four employed every year by the U.S. government. So my parents were sort of like, maybe that's not so good. You know, engineering, practical. That's why a lot of women are attracted to engineering, I think. Decided to go to Calvin College. That was just at the start of their four-year program. And again, you know, we had maybe a dozen girls out of all the engineers who started, maybe 60 or 70 or 80 of them. And I graduated, I think, one of two women out of a class of 40-some. Mm-hmm. So there were women, but not very many. And I feel like, actually, I got more opportunities because of that in that program, that there was a consciousness, I think, in engineering among the faculty that we wanted to support women. So, you know, I was like chair of their little engineering club or whatever, because I stuck out, right? You're going to have a vote. And yeah, I don't know. So I had a really good experience in college. Decided to go on to grad school, mostly because the job prospects weren't that good at the time. I really liked school, so I thought, seems like a good plan. And then later on, kind of developed the idea that maybe I wanted to go into teaching. And I'll have to be honest, too, that I thought it was maybe a better way to potentially combine family and work, because a lot of the engineers that I knew in industry, that was like a full-time plus commitment. It was a little harder, I thought, to balance family, which may or may not have been relevant, actually. As it turns out, academia has its own inflexibilities in terms of family. But I went to the University of Wisconsin-Madison to get my master's degree. And then while I was there, met the man that I would eventually marry. And as any of you folks out who are dealing with two career couples, you know, where are you going to go with that, right? So he took a job in Wichita, Kansas, and I followed him there and started graduate school. Weren't so excited living in Wichita, so we decided to move back up to the upper Midwest, northern Midwest, where we were more comfortable. And by the grace of God, ended up moving back to West Michigan, where he got a job offer. And then I finished my PhD at Michigan State. And then we were living not that far from Calvin's campus. We used to go running there because we didn't have sidewalks in our little apartment complex. And one day I ran across an old faculty member from Calvin who said, "Hey, Gail, what are you up to?" And I said, "Oh, I'm getting really close to having a PhD in mechanical engineering." And he said, "Oh, one of our faculty members is going back into industry. We need somebody to teach manufacturing and mechanical engineering courses. And actually, we don't have the budget to get a full position necessarily, so we would consider somebody part-time." And that was exactly what I was looking for. Calvin is one of the few places that offers a reduced load, regular faculty position. So, yes, trumpet that from a policy standpoint. That's been wonderful for me. So I've been between 60 and 80% load over the last 25 years at Calvin. Had very supportive faculty in my department in terms of maternity. We planned all of our kids for summers. Only messed up with one of them where we started a little too early, perhaps, and that was a late April delivery date, but I had faculty who would cover for me, so I never had to do sort of the official maternity leave thing. My colleagues just helped me work it out, which was great, and I've heard horror stories from other people at Calvin, actually, in different departments who did not experience that kind of support. I feel like the engineers were all like very practical, you know, if you're good, we'll accept you and work with you. We have goals to achieve. I feel like that's been my experience of engineering. Now 25 years later, I've been chair of the engineering department for the last 3 years. Moving into the administration was a revelation, and there are some things I like about it and things that I don't, but I've definitely appreciated Calvin's experience and realize at the same time that's probably not so typical of other women who've experienced more discrimination or issues. And there are times when I feel like being a reduced load or part-time person is frowned on by some. You know, I'm caving as a woman, right? In a way, I've subsumed my career to my husband's, although now we're in a spot where I have the permanent tenured position, and he's moved jobs a couple of different times in the area because I won't move. So different times, different in your life, different relationships and so on take precedence. So that's all I'll say.
I'm Hannah Eagleson. I work with InterVarsity's Emerging Scholars Network, and we co-sponsor the Student Early Career Track here, which I've been delighted to do for the past 3 years. And I actually have a PhD in 17th century poetry, which is not the usual background for editing faith and science material or organizing faith and science conferences, but in my role with InterVarsity, that's been an important part of what I do, and I've really enjoyed it. And I do like the history of science, which is important in 17th century poetry, believe it or not, so those are some of the connections. And 10 years ago, I was having a full-blown graduate school crisis. About halfway through my PhD, I love to learn, I love literature, I love being in communities of learners and teachers, and I thought I would really enjoy a lot of aspects of the PhD, and I'm very grateful I did it. My department was great, but lots of people have crises in the middle of graduate school, and I was one of them. I hit this point where I realized the shape of this career looks a little bit different than I expected it to look. I don't have very much time to think about those differences because I'm doing so much. And on top of that, a bunch of other things in my life didn't seem to be going well. I was really, had some romantic hopes that had just completely not worked out. I had had, some of the struggles of feeling like, oh, I'm at X age and I'm still have so many years of training. I don't know how to write a dissertation, so I don't even know how many years of training it's going to be still. And that was a very difficult time. And what got me through it was, first of all, the grace of God, and secondly, communities, especially communities of Christians. I mean, certainly my secular colleagues at UD deserve lots of credit. They were also very supportive, but I found that there was this point where I just thought, I really need people to pray for me. And so I just made a list of a bunch of people who cared about me in one way or another. I emailed them and I said, "Can I send you a prayer request once a month about my dissertation, and will you pray for it?" And it was an astonishing experience. So, I've had some prayers that I prayed for a long time and God hasn't answered them with a yes, but in this case, pretty much every time I asked those people to pray for something, it would happen, often within days. I would say, I can't write this paragraph, and they'd pray for it, and I'd figure out how to write it. I would say, I haven't figured out which form I need to do this, and they would pray for that, and I would figure out the form. And so it was an astonishing experience, and it really transformed that experience for me, and is one of the reasons that I care so much about supporting early career academics, including scientists and early career professionals, because that community meant so much to me. So I apologize, being a fan of 17th century poetry, I usually prefer archaic technologies, but I do have my notes on my phone, so I'll be glad to get it a few times. I'd just like to share a few thoughts about finding that kind of community very briefly, and then about being that kind of community. So I would say that sometimes it feels hard to find that community, particularly of Christians who understand your field. One great place to look is ministries like InterVarsity and professional societies like American Scientific Affiliation. Also, sometimes if you're involved in your local church and you just ask around, you can find someone in the church who does something kind of close to what you're doing. I also think that there is a good case to be made for looking beyond the obvious when you're looking for community. Some of the people who prayed me through graduate school had absolutely no interest in anything beyond a bachelor's degree and were doing something else and very happy with it, but they cared about me, and so they patiently listened to my problems sorting through writing about 17th century poetry and prayed for me. And then I think another key thing is just to learn the art of asking questions that opens up meaningful conversations. And as you kind of hone that art, often those questions open up people's interest in things and you start to learn more about what they're intrigued by. And that's also sometimes a good way to connect with people who are you wouldn't have realized had experience in your professional field or something like that. And then I'd say that finding that kind of community also dovetails with the virtues that it takes to be a part of that community and to provide it for others. And I'd say one key thing there is, as you feel comfortable, you know, learn to be open about your faith, and you will attract others who have faith or who are interested in it. And there are, you know, there are wise ways to do that. It does take discretion to know when is the right moment. But one key thing I've found chatting with Christians who've been successful in this in secular settings is if you can find a way to link your faith to other goals that people around you are interested in, that's one great way to open conversation. So your secular colleagues may not be interested in what you learned at church on Sunday, but they probably do care about how scientists communicate with religious audiences about important issues of science. That might be a place to start, for instance. So those are just a few thoughts from me on that.
Okay. I feel like I've been involved in so many panels and discussions throughout this meeting that most of you have heard at least part of my story. So I'll try to give kind of a quick overview. I grew up in a Christian home. My dad was interested in astronomy and had a telescope, so he would take us kids outside in the backyard and look through the telescope at the moon and the stars and the planets from the time I was quite young. And these experiences were especially memorable because I grew up in the rainy Pacific Northwest, and so just to get a clear starry night was kind of a celebration. So. Anyway, I have fond memories of those days, and I was always encouraged in math and science in my family. And some of you have heard this part of the story already. When I got to college, I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with math and science, so I took a lot of it, but I decided to major in political science. I had been the student body president in high school, and there were some aspects of that experience that made me think maybe I wanted to go that direction in life, and I was particularly interested in international relations. And my senior year as an undergrad in poli sci, I did an internship at the U.S. State Department, and it was in the Cold War era, and I was working at what was then the Soviet desk, and I was sitting in on these discussions over weapon systems and things like that, and I fairly quickly realized that a lot of the politicians didn't understand anything about these weapon systems and how they worked. And I thought, you know what, I should go back and get a master's degree. And so I applied to Stanford for a master's program in aeroastroengineering, fresh out of my poli-sci undergrad, and, you know, they let me in. So anyway, I kind of did things the hard way, but and in that time, I was, in my master's program, I was one female out of a master's class of 18. And so it was very, at that time, male-dominated. And, you know, it's funny. I look back on my growing up situation, and I had two brothers. I grew up with brothers. And so I think, you know, there was a little bit of kind of competitiveness already kind of hardwired into me from that family experience. And so being a woman in a large group of men was something that I was a little bit used to. But because of that kind of almost loneliness that I had in that experience, I have a real heart for women now in the sciences. And, you know, I look back, I didn't really have women mentors at that time, but I very much am interested in being a female mentor for the women that are coming behind me. And I've had some amazing experiences. I mean, I was sharing with, I think, the early career and student track, as well as maybe some of the newcomers, a little bit more about my career. And I just, the hallmark of my career has really been to follow God through the doors that he opens and being willing to walk through those doors and you know, boldly go where he calls you to. And that's involved a pretty interesting path. Let's see, I worked, well, my PhD was done at Stanford doing research at NASA Ames in Northern California on spacesuit design. And I was also working with Lockheed at that same time frame on both the Hubble Space Telescope and the International Space Station programs. And I was put in a situation, and you know, God opened the doors and provided the opportunities for me to be Lockheed's corporate astronaut. And so I went through a lot of astronaut training and got to do all kinds of fun stuff, working in the spacesuit, flying planes, jumping out of planes, doing all kinds of interesting things. And then there were the two shuttle accidents. And that kind of really, I don't want to say fully shut the door on, but made it much more difficult to pursue this corporate astronaut thing. And so Lockheed also was going through a merger with Martin Marietta, and they were really not sure what they were going to do in terms of staying in human spaceflight or going more with unmanned programs and whatnot. And this was all going down right as I was finishing my PhD. And so, you know, I have my freshly minted PhD in hand, and I'm ready for the next big challenge and whatnot, and they're kind of shuffling me around the company, stalling for time, essentially, to figure out what their future is going to look like. And about that time, I got recruited by someone who had gone through a similar program at Stanford to work on research and development and programming for the Bellagio fountains in Las Vegas. And it just seemed like such a weird departure, you know, kind of almost a left turn in a sense. And but this guy just kept after me. He was like in full on pursuit to get me to work for him. It turns out he was kind of a closet space junkie and had liked the idea of having somebody that with my background. So after a lot of prayer and consideration, I felt like God was saying, you know, go ahead and do this. And so I went and did that for about 2.5 years. It was a really interesting experience. You know, one of the stories I tell is the summer right before the fountain and the hotel officially opened, the choreographers and I for the fountain were sitting on the sidewalk on the strip in Las Vegas. I don't know if you've ever been to Las Vegas, but so we had these desks with computers set up right at the edge of the lake there on the strip in Las Vegas in front of the Bellagio Lake. Working on segments that we were running on the lake, and we had, there was a cyclone fence behind us that separated us from the street and all the crowds that were going by on these hot summer nights, you know, in Las Vegas. And we'd finish programming a segment of choreography, and we'd press run to get it to run on the fountain, and the segment with the music would run, and the people behind us, behind the fence, would stop and just go, ooh, ah, and we're like, cool, they like it. You know, whereas in the space program, you have to wait years to see your projects realized. This was like instant feedback, and it was just like, wow, this is so cool. At the same time, after, you know, we got it up and running, I spent 2.5 years there, and I was kind of feeling like, you know, this is interesting, but it's not deeply fulfilling, you know. And, you know, it's funny, I've heard stories since where people will go, oh, those fountains are so inspirational. And I'm like, yeah, I'm really glad you enjoyed the experience, but it just didn't feel deeply fulfilling for me. And so from there, I actually took some time off, one of the few times in my life where I've actually taken some time off from career. And I met a woman who, through beach volleyball, worked at the Rand Corporation in Santa Monica, where I lived at the time. And anyway, so she kind of recruited me to apply for the Rand Corporation, and I took that job and was working on kind of policy issues in aerospace, which was kind of neat because it brought together my poli-sci background as well as my technical education. And so I spent some time doing that, and about the shortly into that, I was singing on a worship team at church that included a guy who was a professor at Azusa Pacific University. And he put my name forward to his department chair when that guy went on sabbatical and kind of volunteered me to take his classes while he was gone. And so that was kind of my introduction to Christian higher ed. And once I started doing that, I was like, oh man, this just feels like what I'm called to, you know. And and actually that led to, shortly thereafter, there was an opening for a person to take over the Azusa Pacific Center for Research and Science, which was responsible for kind of hosting science and religion or science and faith conversations on campus at Azusa Pacific. So that position opened up just at the precise right time for me to step into it. And so I spent 15 years doing that and got to sit at the feet of experts from around the world on science and faith. And it was kind of, I think of it as the equivalent of another master's degree, because I got to sit and listen to all these experts. And so from there, then eventually I'd been teaching astronomy primarily at Azusa Pacific, and there was an opportunity at one point when there was big news about possible evidence for gravity waves that Einstein predicted, and I was asked to talk to a number of media outlets, and one of the opportunities that came along was to write an op-ed article for CNN's website on, I think it's called their BeliefNet or something like that. And so I wrote this piece about a Christian perspective to this news of possible evidence for, you know, Einstein's gravity waves. And so the CNN editor titled it very provocatively. He called it, "Does Big Bang Breakthrough Offer Proof of God?" And I cringed at that title, because I, as a, both a Christian and a scientist, I'm really careful with that word proof. But in any case, because he used that word proof in the title, the piece went viral, and there were over like 500,000 views in less than a week, and 70,000 shares on Facebook, and it was in the top 5 worldwide most shared news stories on social media. And that then led to an opportunity. A book publisher contacted me and said, "Can you write a book on this in 4 months? And I'm like, yeah, sure. I mean, again, it was one of those open doors, you know, that God opened. I'm like, who am I to say no, right? So So that kind of all snowballed, and eventually this position as the executive director for the ASA opened up. And it's interesting how God guides and directs your paths if you're looking for those opportunities. And so that's, like I said, that's kind of been the story of my life, is to try to follow God through the doors that he opens. So.
Thank you, Leslie. I've had a very boring life compared to the rest of these folks. I was a scientist first, bachelor's degree at University of California, Berkeley, in chemistry, analytical chemistry. And then at 36, marriage bad, 3 young kids, found church, found Jesus, and never looked back on that. I did a dozen years in the laboratory, and then moved into more administrative positions, managerial positions, program management, institutional management, things of that nature. So with a good chemistry background, I always tell people, with chemistry, you can do anything. You know, it applies in so many different ways. I'm actually more interested in using some time to ask what issues, concerns, questions, needs, there's the word. Oh, we could go to wants, too. Needs, wants. That you folks have, as either women or men, that would help inform Lauren of where to focus her energies. I am concerned that there is so much enthusiasm and one human being who's got a job and is about to start another educational program, and she's going to need some help. And part of the way we do this, as people told me when I started all this and didn't follow the directions, is focus. You know, don't try to... Ruth's sitting there grinning because she's the one that kept telling me, Lynn, one thing at a time, not 25. So would you be willing to speak up? What are your needs as a woman in science? What would you want an organization to do to help support you? What do you think are her most urgent things? We heard a little bit about... interest in seminars, doing speed mentoring maybe at seminars, and somebody else with the online chat desire. But let's be more specific. You could raise hands, men included. I know you love us.
So I do also really want to make a really note with what Hannah was talking about, and I meant to mention it earlier in the talk, that I do want to encourage theologians and people of different backgrounds also to take part in our organization. I know it is Christian Women in Science, but we also need our fellow theologians and our fellow women as well, who can give us different perspectives and encourage us as well with that. So I just wanted to segue with that.
Yeah, okay. So what do you think? James?
Well, I'm having a different thought.
Go for it. Okay. We like thoughts.
And my thought is, programs like this need a fearless leader, and we have one. The fearless leaders need associates to help.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep, yep.
So I think one of the things I would encourage Lauren to think about is maybe find in this room or in this organization people who are excited about doing what you're doing, and you lead them, and they help you to do some of these things. That
absolutely.
Way, more can get done.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, yes. Working on that. Yes.
So I came in a little skeptical, to be quite honest. But as we've been talking and hearing the panelists, I'm like, I got a story. I do. And Deb, you said, you know, Zoom meeting is so easy to set up. Mm-hmm. And so we could set up a monthly Zoom meeting where one person shares their story, people chime in, and we could have just kind of spontaneous mentoring. Just really grassroots, not even all that organized, but one person will post that. And that's something that would be attractive to me, just to talk to people and hear people's stories. So
absolutely.
So I say that, but I'm willing to help. You know, if I set up a calendar and people volunteer for a month, and I mean, that's easy. I can do that. So
yeah, great. Thank you. Yes, that would be definitely
wonderful.
I put
a 2 on my scale of 1 to 4.
Uh-huh.
Move that up a little bit, maybe.
Move that up a little bit. Okay, thank you. Yes, I will
do that. Yes, thank you. I'm so glad that you got, you know, encouraged and inspired to do that. Yes, so that's kind of like my idea with the online active chats.
Mm-hmm.
Is kind of something very similar to that. And
yeah.
So, yes,
so
thank you.
Help you.
Yes.
I walk alongside you.
Yes. Yeah, no, absolutely.
A body.
Yes. Yes, I would welcome that. Thank you. Yes, I appreciate that. Yes, Heather.
This just has to do with specific topics. I don't know if you're open to hearing
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been talking with some women. I'm from Vancouver, and I've been involved in women in data science. There's a couple different organizations there.
Mm-hmm.
And just through talking with people, some of the questions that are kind of active areas of conversation is the difference between a sort of Sheryl Sandberg approach to encouraging and championing women, and there's a book by Susan Cain called Quiet, and it's about introverts. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I'm interested in is how we can, what we can achieve because of who we are instead mm-hmm. of in spite of who we are.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
So rather than saying women have to behave this way, they have to engage this way. What, and then this is for women and men, but how can, what can we achieve because of who we are? So that's kind of one of the areas and topics that I'd be interested in.
Okay.
And also just something also on singleness, and I don't know if any of the panelists have had a prolonged season of singleness in their careers, but that would be interesting because as a Christian woman too, what that means and for our professional interactions and just, I think because you already feel like you don't belong as a woman in a male-dominated field, the added aspect of you also being a Christian and also potentially in a season of singleness, what that means for how you interact and how you belong, that would also be another area of talk.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that actually, I was thinking about, there's a couple of areas that I am kind of interested in kind of going into, and singleness is definitely one of them, especially going into other groups of women, you know, single moms, you know, for ones, impoverished women who, you know, who, I mean, there's plenty of brilliant women who rise from areas that are, you know, where there's not a lot of wealth and there's not a lot of opportunity, and they rise up from there. But I'm sure that there's more than what we see too there. And then also women from different backgrounds too, and kind of just engaging in that as well. So yes, thank you for bringing that up. Yes, would love that as well. So, yes.
I think a lot of what we talked about is encouragement of each other,
mm-hmm.
which we really should be doing. And I would like to see an emphasis on providing ways for the voice to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's through writing op-ed kind of things or writing chapters for books.
Mm-hmm.
Dale wrote a brilliant chapter for a book that we all pointed with. When I asked you, I don't think I'd met you.
No.
I knew you by reputation and wanted you to write to the topic that you wrote to. So I think it's important that we do things in our respective communities to give women voices.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to see some emphasis on how to give voice to individuals who
absolutely
may not have it.
Related to that, we're always looking for more people to write about science at the Emerging Scholars Network blog, so if you are interested in that, please chat with me. And then, of course, ASA has the wonderful God in Nature webzine, which is also a great publishing outlet.
And a really low risk. I'm a book review editor for PSCF, Biology, Ecology, Evolution, and Genetics. So if you're interested in reviewing a book in that topic area, get a hold of me.
Yeah, Jordan.
I'm just, as a guy who's teaching, right now, I counted the other day, I teach about 80% women in my classroom right now. And so if that's really just shifted, I've been teaching a lot more biology and health science majors. So if there's things that could come out of it that could also help, you know, what are things that I could do to help give voice to the women in my class, and things that I can even do in my class that are maybe a little bit more approachable, and working with our computer science professor who, you know, what are things that you know, guys can do to help out? I think that would be great as well if that could be a part of this. But I don't want to sort of impose my vision of what it means to be a woman in science onto the women who aren't, and so that would be helpful.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up, and I think that also kind of relates to what our panelists talked about, how, you know, they were one of just a few women in their groups in their career when they were going to school, you know, and how they emerged from that and everything. So I do think that is a very vital topic that we need to address, how it is growing, you know, and how can, you know, the insight of what these women went through in their career and, you know, the other fellow women out there who have gone through that shift as well.
So that might be
session for the next meeting idea. So inclusive teaching.
Yeah.
Right. And that's to go beyond gender inclusion. Yeah. But there's a great literature on that.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
Idea.
Someone write that down.
Yeah, really. Yeah,
Lynn is desperately writing.
Yes, I see it. I'm so glad because I did not grab my pen.
Oh, thank you.
I got you. Yes, go ahead, Nadine.
Related to what Robin just said, I just finished a seminar that dealt with a lot of material on recruiting and enhancing and being intentional in teaching to reach women in STEM, diversity. So it's been really fun to work with colleagues in our science division, and so I think that's spot on. Being intentional, for example, just thinking of an advisee and saying, would you like to do research with me, an undergrad, or not assuming that there's not an interest, because some of our students or some of the people we interact with, because of their background, they may need someone to say, you have something that I see. And so I think what Robin said in terms of how we teach, how we interact, how we just be intentional. And actually, we took a survey of students of diversity here, and many of them came out and said that the science faculty here were kind of nerdy, and we lacked social skills. And you know, we laughed personally, but then they were right, because we just sort of do our own thing and don't really bring them into the community. Maybe we focus on people that are more vocal.
I guess I would just say that I'm right now looking for strategies to reach out to the people who don't necessarily buy into our being inclusive and diverse. I mean, we just had an incident with students in a class where young male students did some things that were maybe just stupid, but, you know, could be considered harassment.
You know, so
use those stereotypes. But, I mean, it's hard, right? You can't just preach to them. They're young. You know, we all know with our own children, how do we lead? But how do you run a classroom to avoid those situations and to... Yeah, so, the people who aren't sympathetic or don't see what they're doing, strategies for that, I think, would be awesome.
So even outside of the institution, you know, speak to that. So I'm a very outgoing person. I think we've noticed that a little. And so it was hard for me going into a professional lab setting with a whole bunch of scientists who are very to themselves and, you know, have the wonderful, awkward personality traits and everything. And, you know, and I'm like, hi, talk to me. Why aren't you... Hi, you know, I'm trying to learn from you, and I'm like over their shoulder, and they're like, what are you doing? Watching, trying to learn, and, you know, and so I think, you know, that's also another important thing, too, is also in the professional career, outside of institutions as well. I mean, teaching is important because that also segues into career, but, you know, also in the actual everyday career part of the life, the professional, and how we can engage more with that, too.
You should go first. You haven't talked. No, I haven't. It was just another topic that might be nice to discuss in that vein, like maybe trying to address, I feel like, the dichotomy that women in science kind of are, that we're stuck with between, like, maybe the voice we're hearing from our churches and that women are supposed to be submissive and, like, fall into a certain role, but if we want to be successful in our careers, we need to be more aggressive, we need to be, like a completely different side of ourselves, and I feel like we're just getting mixed messages, and then also kind of tying along with that, like, how do we be our own advocates? Because I think, especially for someone who's grown up in the church, that's not something that's taught just to anybody, but especially to women, how, like, you're not really supposed to keep it up. I don't know. So, like, I think being our own advocates and being comfortable with that, because, like, that's not a skill that we're ever really taught, and, like, maybe even feel comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Yes.
Two things. Gordon College publishes a magazine called Stillpoint,
okay.
And they did an amazing article on collaborating between professors and students. Mm-hmm. So if you're a professor or a teacher and want to collaborate with your students and really bring them up and in, you know, get that Stillpoint article on collaboration. Mm-hmm. It was within the last year.
Okay.
Maybe you could link people to it.
Yeah, perfectly. Yeah, that would be great.
Do you see it? I don't know if you can find it, but anyway, somebody find it and link it.
I can get it for you.
You can get it.
Thank you.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I wasn't sure I belong in CWIS. I'm not a scientist. I taught history and reading specialist for years, but I'm an intercessor, and if anybody wants my email, I loved what you said about needing prayer partners at critical stages. So anybody who wants my email, I will pray when you are in crisis.
Yeah, no, thank you. I welcome that. And I mean, it is Christian women in science, but like I said, I do welcome women in ASA who are of different walks and paths and careers as well, because I mean, we are all in this together, and we do need women who are going to pray for us in our time of crisis, no matter what stage of career we're at. You know, I mean, we could be fearing the end of our career, or we could be fearing the beginning of our career, and either way, we need prayer constantly, and that's going to come from all of us banding together. So I would still encourage you to.
I'm on the ASA Prayer Council,
okay.
But right now it feels very impersonal, and we're praying at this macro level
for the
organization, which is important, and I believe in that, but there's got to be a more personal, I'm having a bad day, just lift me up.
Right, and absolutely.
So.
Yes, yeah, so that's also going to be a part of number four. So that's like a tool that I want to offer, because I think, you know, that's prayer for me is a tool. So it's like a pen. I need it every day, you know. So, yes.
I just noticed some research recently, and I can't cite it offhand, but actually relating more to the field of just discrimination in general, and it was kind of talking about how when we're in a certain group, so say women in science, we can do things like encourage each other, and sometimes that's all we need, but I think they were actually through the research pointing to the fact that when it comes to actual opportunities, we need to kind of address the people who've been the gatekeepers, so to speak. So in science, that would be traditionally usually the white male.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were actually sort of advocating the idea of getting those people involved. And so I think if there's any way we could get men involved.
Yes, absolutely. That's why I encourage men. Yes, that
there's six men here.
Yes, that's why I encourage men to come, you know, to this, to, you know, to partake and be involved and get involved. Because yes, I absolutely do agree that it for a shift to occur, you know, it does have to start, you know, at the, well, I don't know if you want to say at the bottom or at the top. I guess it just, you know, just kind of
better leave that one there.
Right.
Go on to something else.
Get the idea though, right? Try not to be taboo. So, but yeah.
I want to add something to that, because I think what you said is really important. And being in a minority group, I kind of struggle with these issues as well, between total inclusion and the need to be engaged in the other individuals that you want to interact with and that you want better respect from. But I have come to believe that it's really important to have a space for yourselves without us. Because there are things I know you might want to talk about, and having me here would be problematic. So you have to sort of figure out a way to do both. You need space to say just for you, and you have to do what you're talking about, because that's how you change.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, a lot of that will fall into the number four section of that, you know, the tools and everything like that, where we can have those discussions and those things set aside to more individualized or more specific and honed in on these various topics that kind of need to be engaged more regularly rather than just every quarter or so often.
I really appreciate you saying that, James. I think one of the most powerful professional development things I've done in my life has been a two-week women-only, I call it Dean Boot Camp, that I went to. And I wonder if, you know, a day before the next meeting of just women's leadership development activities. But yeah, no, I got it on my card. I'll help.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything because Vicki and I briefly discussed some things. But I didn't want to. I don't want to get anybody overly excited or say anything without. But yes, we are looking into some women's.
I think a day where it's just you and there's structured activities too. I think one of the most powerful things was filling out a fill-in-the-blank paragraph about who am I, what do I have to offer, and where do I see that playing out. You know, we don't talk about ourselves that way.
Right.
You know, I have something to offer.
Mm-hmm.
We, even in this room, we apologize for ourselves an awful lot. So how do you, wait, Lauren, and I think I said that to you, did I not?
Yes, you did. You told me not to.
I did tell you that.
I listened
and,
well.
and ask for ourselves, you know. I think that's we can help each other do that, I guess.
So one thing that Vicki and I discussed was maybe like a come early 1 to 2 day thing for the women, just for, you know, for us to engage in social gatherings. And then I would like to have a structured day of us engaging, you know, more, what's the word I'm looking for? Intimately as well.
Yeah.
So, yes, it was something floating around. No promises or anything, though, of course. So, yes.
When the list and the purple pen went around, I declined to sign up for it because I'm not a scientist. I'm not an academic. I'm a spouse of a faculty member, and I have children who are in college. And so, you know, at first I'm like, I don't have a spot here in your strategy, but it is good to know that I can actually do something. I'm not sure what yet to help you out, but I do want to, because this needs to be done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those girls who go through college, and even before they hit college, those high school girls who are fascinated by the small things and the large things about God's creation, need to be told that they are more than just future spouses, future moms, future whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They are scientists now.
Right,
and
absolutely.
You guys need help.
Thank you.
Where's that sign up list? Get it back over to us.
There you go.
Yes, I do. I didn't want to be, I tried to keep this a little simple and sweet because I wanted us to engage like we are. I do have kind of a, I'm very ambitious. I have a 5 year, but it'll probably be more like a 10 year track that I would like to do with the vision. Not that I'll always be the person leading it or making that forward, but something that I do want to do is I feel like it starts our churches too, and our high schools and our middle schools, is, you know, we need to get active and involved in there too. That's not something that I foresee, you know, happening like next year, but that was something that'll become, you know, later on, that hopefully from our growth that can be the type of fruit that we bear. And so
it
thank you for bringing
earlier,
that up.
Though, there's a culture there.
Yes.
That needs to be addressed.
Yes.
First.
Yes, absolutely. Which is why I also, you know, want theologians and other women of different walks of life to be a part of this as well, because their insight is invaluable as well for us.
And I think there can be some coordination between this group and the local chapters.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
How can CWIS partner in the local chapters? And I think there's some potential synergy there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Just from the engineering side, perhaps less with the hard sciences, but it has to be middle school.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you let them get into high school, they will have given up by then.
That's right.
And we desperately need more women in engineering.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know it's a little early. We can still keep talking if we want, but I do know that if you guys, you know, it's last day of registration, packing, everything. Yes, sir.
I just wanted to say, if you're going to wrap this up, I just wanted to say a word about another need that I have that I think you all can help me with. And this, I am in a little nonprofit called Solar Household Energy.
Mm-hmm.
Initials are SHE. And we develop solar cookers. So let me ask the question of everybody. How many of you are the primary cook in your house, in your household? Basically, all the women.
Hey, you know, James has his hands up, okay? Props to that. Can you give my husband a class? He fed me this last semester, but ramen noodle got a little old.
We are trying to distribute these lightweight, simple cook stoves around the world to low-income people, and the real challenge is not the engineering, but it's the anthropology and sociology of cooking practices, and that's where you come in. I'm looking for research helpers and people that maybe you can suggest some students to get into a research project to help us with the study of cooking practices and how we can fit the modern cooking devices into their lifestyle, the daily cycle. So there's not a lot of data that's been collected on this because, you know, that's women's work. Somehow that just gets done. And most of the literature, like about food security, it's a bunch of men talking about bags of grain in a warehouse. And the part that where it comes to the table, that somehow gets done. We don't know about that. So anyway, that's a need that I have, and I'm thinking that this group can also contribute to scientific research.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And if you'd welcome students, I'm sure students would love to hop on a project like that and help you out with that. So as we finish up, I hope it would be okay if I just pray over us and over our group and everything, if that would be okay. And not the world's best prayer, so please don't judge me for it.
There you go, apologizing again.
I'm pretty sure Rob's going to smack me on the way out. My mom's been trying to break that habit for the better half of my life, and not very successfully. So if we could just pray, that'd be great. Father God, I thank you so much for this wonderful community and this wonderful conference that we've had these past few days. And I feel so encouraged by all of the wonderful men and women that are here and the group that came specifically during this time slot just to be here for one another and listen to one another and encourage one another and also speak about the needs and the desires that we have and the way that we can fulfill your mission, Lord, and glorify you through these works and through these desires that we have, Lord. I pray going forward that the fire that's ignited with this conference can stay lit, Lord, and that we can remain diligent in serving you through our works of our science and being backed by our faith and knowing that we have that strong foundation to hang on to, Lord. And I pray that we can just remain a strong community, Lord. And I thank you again for the women in this organization and the help that the men have offered as well. Lord, I just want to thank you for that. And I pray also as things move forward, Lord, that I can just be a soft-hearted and open leader, open to critique, open to feedback, open to encouragement, Lord. And I pray that I can help lead this organization to soaring skies, Lord, just so we can just glorify you worldwide one day, just as an organization together as women. And I thank you enough. And in your name we pray. Amen.
Great job.
Yeah.